All right, everybody, welcome on into the Auburn Daily Show. Lance Daw hanging out here with you, joined as always on every single Monday, Dylan Lark, aka your boy the Tank. Dylan, on today's episode, we got a little bit of a ranking going on, if you will, our top three newcomers of Auburn football's 2023 class, both recruits and transfer portal additions. Also later on in the show, I told you this before we started recording, I just kind of want to baby rage a little bit on the show today. I just kind of want to throw a fit about what happened at the end of Auburn, Tennessee. And look, it's not just going to be, oh, Auburn got hosed, oh, this, that, and the other. I want to just kind of discuss SEC officiating, college basketball officiating as a whole, maybe a little bit here with you, Dylan. But to start off, we've got three guys each that we are very excited about for this upcoming class. Now, this is not to say that we're not excited about this guy or the other guy. We are just trying to look at our three most valuable additions, or the three players that we're most excited about, these newcomers here. So this entire class, I think, is phenomenal, Dylan. I think you would agree with that. But there are three guys I think we want to hone in on today.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how you want to do it. You want to do it like I say my three, like my number three, you say your number three, and go back and forth like that?
Let's work back and forth like that and work our way up all the way to number one.
All right. So I'll kick it off with Keldrick Faulk, the four-star, the number one recruit in Auburn's high school recruiting class. A guy who is a Florida State commit for the longest time, flipped on signing day, and just a heck of a hire. I think a heck of a commit, a heck of a pickup for Hugh Freeze and his staff, because it surprised a lot of us that he flipped. And I don't think it gets any better than Keldrick Faulk, especially because I think he has the potential to be a day one starter. I do think he's kind of come in probably around the edge or D end position two or three, right behind Dylan Brooks and Elijah McAllister. But his talent level is on the same line of, you know, when you're playing somebody 14 and you have that like really good freshman that comes through and you're like, I could redshirt him.
Yep.
But on the other side, it's like, how can you? I think he's right, on that. Yep. I think he's on that line. You can't not have him on the field day one.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of evidence to support Auburn needing him, I think, at different spots, maybe this season, especially if injury occurs. Auburn may be needing a little bit more Keldrick Faulk than they maybe would have asked from him to begin the season. There's an article that's going to be going up here. I don't know if I'm going to have it up today or if I'm going to have it up tomorrow morning, about Auburn and their snap counts for their upcoming for this upcoming season. So I went through and added up for every single position on the roster outside of special teams the snap counts from the 2022 season. I added in the transfers that Auburn has also brought in, and then I also did the average snap count for every single position, again excluding special teams. And edge is one of the thinnest positions overall in terms of total snaps, and it's one of the thinnest positions overall in terms of average snaps as well. Auburn needs some depth there, Dylan, and to have a guy like Keldrick Faulk maybe rotate in, and maybe not as like a primary edge, but somebody that can work on the outside of that defense at 6'5", 270 pounds, it's going to be very valuable for the Tigers, I think, this upcoming season. And you mentioned it, the highest rated recruit in Auburn's 2023 class. When you watch this guy on film, you have to be very excited about the command he has, I think, for such a young kid at the line of scrimmage. It's very similar to Derek Hall and the fact that I think his primary strength is his first step, what he does immediately once the ball is snapped. I would like to see maybe a little bit more development from him as far as what he does after in terms of adding moves and different things like that, but still just a very strong presence on the outside in high school. I think he's going to translate well to the college game if he's able to add a little bit more muscle to his frame, this, that, and the other, all those things that you see as freshmen obviously develop up as they make their way up from high school. Keldrick Faulk, definitely somebody I would have had on my list. I kind of want to cover more guys here, though, Dylan, is why I tried to maybe differ my list a little bit from yours. But Keldrick Faulk would have been one of my top three guys, definitely a top five guy for sure. The number three guy that I have, and I hope I didn't mess you up, Dylan, in terms of ordering here, because we were talking about this before we started. Dylan Wade, I think, is my number three guy for the Auburn Tigers with their newcomers this 2023 cycle. I think it's very, very clear Auburn needed help at the tackle spot desperately last season. To go back to what I was talking about just a little bit ago about Auburn and their snap counts, there was only one snap. If I added it up correctly, there was only one returning snap on roster from the tackle spot last year before you added in the transfers. And that was one snap that Avery Jernigan played at tackle. Outside of that, Auburn didn't have anything. Killian Zaire was gone. Brendan Coffey was gone, if I'm not mistaken. He played tackle as well. Auburn needed that experience desperately through the portal and through the recruiting class. And they got two really solid tackles. Another one I believe you're going to talk about, Dylan. But Dylan Wade from Tulsa, he's a very experienced guy. Very, very nice size there as well at 6'4", 305 pounds. His PFF grades show through his first two seasons with the Golden Hurricane that he can improve and is improving. He took a massive leap from a 53 PFF grade to a 66.9 grade, which I can't remember. I did the article a couple months ago whenever he committed, but that would have been like easily like top three on Auburn's roster in terms of offensive line last year. It may have been one of the best. And so that's very exciting to see Auburn not just get a body in the room at that spot, but get a body in the room that is going to, kind of has to, but is going to contribute day one. Dylan Wade is somebody that I'm very excited about, primarily because of how desperately Auburn needed it.
My only issue with Dylan Wade, and it's kind of a nitpicky type thing, is the fact that he spells his name wrong. D-Y-L-A-N superiority when it comes to indeed. How it's spelled Dylan. But, I mean, I love the pickup. 6'4", 290 pounds, an offensive tackle is pretty massive. And if you've listened to me on any podcast on offensive linemen, you know I love the big boys up front. The big uglies are one of my favorite positions to talk about because Dylan Wade is a monster of a human being. And I think, yeah, I mean, there's not anyone – you said he'd be like top three on in the position from last year on per PFF, like the grading.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think he would have been an immediate starter if he would have committed here whenever he was a high school recruit. And now that he's got the college experience and he's coming to Auburn, I think he's going to be a star at that right tackle position.
863 snaps is what he accumulated from last season with the Golden Hurricane. Again, only 2 years so far in college, but he's got a lot of experience on him. And I'm curious to see how that translates to the SEC level. Like you said, I don't really think it matters because of how much Auburn just needs something at that spot. And again, he's somebody that I think will definitely shine now that he's getting an opportunity with an SEC school. Dylan, your number two guy here as we work through our top three newcomers.
My number two is going to be the guy who's on the opposite side of the offensive line from Dylan Wade. It is Gunnar Britton. This dude is 6'6", 305 pounds, and he is a freight train of a human being. He is a great pass blocker, and he is massive. And I think I've said it multiple times, he has the potential to be the best left tackle that Auburn has seen since Greg Robinson in 2013. And I think he could probably overwhelm that just because I think his game is nearly perfect from what I've seen. And I mean, I saw some of the highlights, and the one that was posted about his highlights against Auburn were kind of weird because the first one was kind of him just walking around, but the rest of them was him shutting down Derek Hall, which you have to be a godsend at left tackle to be able to shut down Derek Hall. And I think, like, when I look at this offensive line, I see how talented it can be and how talented it is based on the recruits coming in. And I think that all starts with Gunnar Britton.
Look at Gunnar Britton and what he's done from an experience standpoint, from a PFF standpoint, like you mentioned, from a physicality, a size standpoint. I think all of it adds up, Dylan, to what you're saying there about this could be the best left tackle Auburn has seen in a decade. It has the chance to be the best that Auburn has seen in quite some time. Just to work through his snap counts here. Again, I'm very excited about this article that I'm putting out. Dylan, he had 1,100 snaps this last season. 1,100. He had 1,036 on the offensive line. And then he had, I believe, somewhere in like the 80 or 90 range for field goals and extra point kicks and stuff like that. But man, this guy has a lot of experience on him. Go ahead.
Also, fun fact, he blocked the extra point against Arkansas in 2019.
Really?
Like, yeah. I'm on the Auburn Athletics page. I'm reading his bio, and it said blocked an extra point at Arkansas in 2019.
Whoa. Well, you know, I think there are a lot of different offensive linemen that could have probably blocked an extra point on Arkansas in 2019, but that is a feat, though. For real. I mean, also, maybe Auburn utilizes that, like you mentioned, 6'6", 305 pounds. But Dylan, look at this guy's PFF grade. So a 68.5 grade as a freshman, which is already better than what we mentioned with Dylan Wade last season. 77.3 in his sophomore year, an 84.4 grade in 2021, and then 78.6 last year. He's consistently been one of the better left tackles, offensive tackles in the country for 3 years now. Like, definitely in that top third of the nation. What does he do in an SEC school? You can only imagine with the player development, with Jake Thornton as the offensive line coach here at Auburn, he's only going to at least maintain the level of excellence that he has had up until this point. If not, maybe we see some further development, creating a really solid option there at that left tackle spot, maybe an anchor. And look, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but wouldn't it just be hilarious after all of this time, Auburn not being able to recruit the offensive line, for Hugh Freeze to step in and to get a left tackle into the NFL draft and get like a reasonably high pick, like a third round pick? Wouldn't that be funny?
I mean, if it all goes to my headcanon, he'll be a first round pick. Just because Greg Robinson was, I believe, the number two pick in the 2013 NFL draft.
I believe so.
I think he was number two to the Rams. And I wish his career panned out a little bit better. I wish he made some better decisions. But, I mean, Gunnar Britton is going to be that dude. He is him. He is a dog. I'd buy his jersey if I saw it. Just because he has been one of the recruits I have been hammering in that Auburn fans should be excited to watch. And it doesn't get any better than having a great left tackle with a right-handed quarterback. He is your blindside blocker, and he's the most important position on the field most of the time.
And I think on top of all of that, I think we're going to see an opportunity for a lot of these newcomers. If they're not acclimated to playing in an SEC-style environment, they're going to have 3 or 4 games this season at the beginning of the year to kind of get comfortable with that. And then you've got, I believe, your first SEC game, if I'm not mistaken, is a road game against Texas A&M. I may be wrong on that. You can pull that up. You've got a road game to Cal in week 2. So the competition, very similar to this year, it kind of builds up as you work your way through the first month of the schedule. So these kids are going to have plenty of opportunity to kind of build on what they have got. That foundation is certainly there. Guys like Gunnar Britton, I think if they're not already comfortable with it, and according to the numbers, he is, according to the film, he is, then he's certainly going to have a chance to continue to work on that foundation. Very excited about a guy like Gunnar Britton. My number two guy, Dylan, is a guy that we both have on our list, and he may be your number one guy, is DeMario Tolan, linebacker out of LSU. Auburn was looking at this kid coming out of high school, and they were able to get him through the transfer portal after he decided that he was going to peace out after one season at LSU. He was a very solid recruit, again, coming out of high school, and the Tigers needed linebacker depth. And linebacker, I think talent, maybe depth isn't the right word there. They needed better high-end talent with their starters. After what we saw last season outside of Owen Papo, the Tigers very clearly needed some better things going on in that starting rotation in that room. DeMario Tolan, former, mid-tier four-star linebacker, top 200 player nationally in the 2022 class. He's got the Auburn linebacker size at 6 foot, 205 pounds. I think this kid is going to be just another mainstay and maybe returning to form here for Auburn's linebacker core. Maybe in a couple of years once he gets a little bit more experience on him. I don't see this guy working out as like a Deshaun Davis type, but Dylan, I think if you give this guy some more experience, you give this guy some time, he's going to be just like some Auburn linebackers we've seen in the past. It's just like, it's another maybe slightly undersized backer that just comes in and is productive.
Yeah, if you look at him, he looks very familiar to a linebacker that we've been very acquitted to over the past 4 years. He's 6 foot two, 222 pounds. And the funny thing is his number is also zero.
Oh,
which if you didn't know, that was about the same build and the same jersey number as one Owen Papo, who I believe had his career mostly wasted by some questionable staffs that were around him and some questionable formations. But when you watch DeMario Tolan and you look at his like profiles and everything about that, he is a great pass coverage linebacker, which you look for in today's game, because you can't trust cornerbacks to cover tight ends, or you can't trust safety sometimes, but a linebacker is pretty much who you look for to cover like those checkdowns, those tight ends, those running backs. those kind of players. And when you watch DeMario Tolan, he looks just like Owen Papo. He's probably not the athletic freak that Owen Papo is, but that's going to be really hard to come by ever again. But I think that he has the ability to maybe surpass what we saw from Owen Papo in his Auburn career, even though I do think Owen Papo is going to pop off in his NFL career. But DeMario Tolan, yeah, he's my number one player for a reason. I think he is going to be that star-studded linebacker who we're going to see play day one. And I think he immediately made this linebacker core go from kind of questionable to really good. I think he kind of brings that kind of moxie to this linebacker core.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily need a whole lot of depth there. I mean, we've seen Auburn in the past work with rotations of maybe two or three linebackers and just essentially keep them on the field, and they were able to come through. So you don't necessarily need, like, once you get a guy like DeMario Tolan into your system, you don't need a ton of depth behind him. There's not a whole lot on PFF or snap counts or anything like that to maybe command that this guy should be somebody special. But I think we're just banking on the fact that he's similar to Auburn linebackers in the past. I think he's very, very similar to Owen Papo when, like you mentioned, you look at his frame and what he did during his limited minutes at LSU. And like, I agree with you. I think that he is going to be somebody that is working their way into the rotation and eventually starting day one for Auburn. And once you get a guy, again, once you get a guy like him, it's nothing against some of these other guys that are in the room already, but I'm under the impression that he is going to come in and outproduce some of these other guys. I mean, the bar is already set so low. I mean, it's not going to be difficult for him to clear it, but he's going to come in and he's going to produce and he's going to kind of hold on to a spot. Now, how much he holds on to that, I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying he's going to start every single game and play every single snap on defense. What I'm saying here is he's going to come in and assert himself. And I think that's maybe why he's the most valuable in your room. He's one of the most valuable in mine in terms of these newcomers, is because of how much Auburn struggled last year at that spot. And to just to bring in somebody that elevates that play, maybe not a ton, but just enough, and is able to kind of have that baseline consistency. It's very similar to what we're talking about with the offensive line. It's just kind of resetting the talent level, I think, at some of these different positions. It's definitely taken a dip over the last couple of years, maybe getting back to where Auburn wants to be. With a guy like DeMario Tolan is kind of the right direction there. The final guy that I have before we move on to, you know, me essentially ranting about this Tennessee game is Avery Jones. And the reason that I have Avery Jones as my number one is not because necessarily of his snap count or of his experience. It goes back to what we were talking about with this offensive line as a whole. This is something that I believe you brought up on a show recently, Dylan, talking about how important the center position is and how Auburn fans maybe looked at the overall product on the offensive line. There were certainly things going on around that center position that were failing the Tigers. But if you don't have that chemistry and that connection and that establishment up front by the guy that is snapping your quarterback the ball, your offense is going to struggle at times. If you can't have the interior, the middle of your line settled down, calm, focused, and physically capable of blocking things up front, things are going to fall apart. And we got to see that numerous times last year. Whenever Auburn had several guys go down with injury, they had to get further down the depth chart. I mean, sometimes snapping the ball was a trouble. Sometimes, you know, blocking up the middle for pass plays was really, really tough. Sometimes almost mind-numbingly impossible whenever you look at games like Georgia. Having somebody with the experience, the size, and the ability to come in again and reestablish the baseline talent level, the baseline consistency, I think Avery Jones is going to provide that. And whoever starting at quarterback this year for Auburn is going to greatly appreciate Avery Jones as opposed to what could have been the second option. And I'm not getting into dogging any individual player. What I'm saying is this staff last season did not do a good job of developing these players that Auburn had. Some of these guys were 4-stars. And I didn't think they did a good job of scheming things up properly for these guys. Just the coaching was not there. And then the talent level, again, I think needs to be elevated. So getting a guy like Avery Jones in the transfer portal, who's already played 4 years in college, had 800-plus snaps last season at ECU, it's going to be good. There's nothing else to say other than that this is what was needed. This is what Auburn had to have, and they got it. And I think that you can look at the outside of the line and say, look, all of these positions are valuable. it's very, very, very thin margins between arguing whether or not one offensive lineman that Auburn's added is more valuable than another. I think Gunnar Britton is going to be a stud for the Tigers. But this center position, Auburn had to get right. And I think they did everything that they could, and they got the best center that they could possibly get in the transfer portal in Avery Jones. So very, very pleased with this pickup.
Can't forget they also got the best center in the country in high school as well with Connor Luke. You talk about how last season Auburn was on their fourth or fifth string center at times.
Yep.
And Hugh Freeze stepped in and picked up a huge name from the transfer portal and flipped a guy from Miami. So, and when you look at Avery Jones' stats, in 2021, he also played some games at guard. So there is also that factor of he can be a rotational guy as well. If he needs to step in at left guard for a little bit, give Connor Lou a couple of snaps. If like Jeremiah Wright or Xavion Miller were to go down, hopefully that doesn't happen. But I think that just adds to his value. I mean, you have a guy who, yeah, you're planning on probably starting at center, but you could also give him that opportunity if he needs to, just to give the team that extra help at guard. He could also play a little bit left guard.
Like you said, let's say Jeremiah Wright goes down, he slides over, Connor Lou takes over at center. I think you have to be still very pleased with the situation of the offensive line. Like you said, one of the best centers coming out of high school last season. Auburn's got options all of a sudden. And I'm not saying the offensive line is deep by any means. I mean, the tackle spots, I mean, if somebody goes down there, I mean, we're starting to have questions. But man, guys like Avery Jones, guys like Connor Lou, shoring up this line, I think it's going to be very, very, very important for Auburn this season, kind of reestablishing things. You've heard every single SEC coach say it. You've heard every coach in America did the Division I level when they're asked what wins football games. It all starts and ends with the trenches. And that offensive line has to be better than what it was last year. Avery Jones, Gunnar Britton, all these different guys that Auburn's added, Dylan Wade, they're going to be able to provide some more consistency. That's the word I keep coming back to, consistency for this O-line coming up this season. So those are our three players that we're both excited about, these newcomers coming in. If you've got any thoughts on the newcomers Auburn is bringing in, you can leave them in the YouTube comments below. If you're listening on podcasts, you can hit us at the Auburn Daily on Twitter. Give us your thoughts about what you think about this upcoming class and who you are excited about seeing. Before we move on to me essentially whining and complaining about SEC officiating for the next 5 minutes, I want to tell you guys about our friends over at Prize Picks. This season, Auburn Daily is partnered with Prize Picks to bring some fun and variety to the picks for 2023. In case you didn't know, Prize Picks is a free app that allows you to choose any 2, 3, 4, or 5 players from any sport in your wagers. You can predict the over or under for the next game, and you can win big prizes if they do well. Prize Picks also has flex options where you can still get paid on winning only 3 of 5 or 2 of 3 of your picks. You can have multiple sports in the same parlay. And best of all, you can use promo code Auburn to receive double on your first deposit up to $100. That's promo code Auburn for double your first deposit. Auburn taking on Texas A&M tomorrow. I can only imagine they're going to have some props for guys like Wendell Green, Jalen Williams, Janai Broome in terms of points, rebounds, blocks, all that good stuff. Would highly encourage you guys to head over to Prize Picks and use promo code Auburn. Maybe lay down some stuff on the Tigers tomorrow. Thank you so much to Prize Picks for making this sponsorship on today's episode possible. All right, Dylan, this is going to be a little off the cuff here, but in case you did not watch it, Auburn played a game this weekend against Tennessee in what was arguably the ugliest game, I think, defensively. It wasn't like all bad, but it was bad. It may be the ugliest game. What was that game from the early 2010s that Auburn played against Alabama where like neither team scored over like 50 something? You remember that game, Dylan? It was like an extremely low scoring game in Neville Arena. I'd have to go back and pull it up, but it was just nobody could hit anything. It was just disgusting. It was in a year where Auburn had two weird games. It was in a year where Auburn had like two weird games against the Crimson Tide. And it was just, it wasn't necessarily the defense that kind of carried that game. It was the fact that nobody could shoot. This was a little bit different, but there were so many moments where Auburn just ended up blanking on point blank shots where, you know, Tennessee ended up also blanking on point blank shots. It was ugly. But it was highlighted by arguably one of the worst no calls we have seen over the last 2 or 3 years in college basketball. I mean, this wasn't just a thing where it was Auburn sphere people, like people on the Auburn sphere on social media complaining. It was like Field of 68, CBS Sports, all these people posting about this, the end of this game, saying, was this a foul? Clearly, with what happened being a foul, break it down for you here real quick. So Auburn is down by 3, I believe, with the ball. They had just gotten a steal off of Santiago Vescovi. Vescovi, it hit off his leg out of bounds. Auburn got the ball. They ran something to set something up that didn't work. So naturally, Wendell Green with the ball in his hands, you know, a la Florida last year, it didn't necessarily know what to do. He gets around a kind of a screen, and he pulls up from deep. And in his face is Tennessee forward. I hope I'm not butchering his name. It's Olivier Kumwa, if I'm not mistaken, is how you pronounce his last name. He does what any defender would do, which is he puts his hands up, straight up, and he tries to just defend the shot without fouling. But what he also ends up doing is leaning into Wendell Green while he is defending that shot. And therefore, Wendell Green, after he jumped up to take the shot, did not have space to land whenever he got back down, because Kumwa was already standing where Green had jumped away from. So Green, with his legs flailing around Olivier, just falls, just thuds on the floor. The shot almost goes in, which is the weirdest part about this. It was such a long three, and it still almost went in. It could have been a foul and one, and Auburn could just won the game right there. But there was no call. There was no call. And it's you look at the rule book. Justin Hokanson, I believe, had something about this yesterday of Auburn Live. You look at the rule book. By definition, what happened was a foul. There's no other way to cut it. It was a foul. But the weirdest part about this, Dylan, is that just about a minute before, a foul was called on Katie Johnson in a very similar situation where Santiago Vescovi pulled up for a three. Johnson did not allow him space to come down after he shot the ball. He was fouled, Vescovi was, and he made the shot. That was Tennessee's last bucket of the game. That was the last field goal of the game before they got some free throws there before the end. There was also a shot by Wendell Green earlier in the game where I don't even know if it was Olivier who was the one that was defending him, but it did a similar thing where he went to shoot the ball, was not given space to land, and the official called a flop. So they called a flop, then they called a foul, then they didn't call anything on three different times where a shooter was not given space to land. I'm not saying the officials lost the game for Auburn, because there was a lot of things in this game back and forth that you saw. I'm like, yeah, that's not a foul, or that's definitely a foul, or he definitely walked and nothing was called. There were all these different things missed. All I want to say here, Dylan, and I'm curious to get your thoughts, it's not SEC officiating, because the SEC doesn't have officials. There are officials in Division I that just rotate out and play different games. And I want to get to the specific officiating crew in a second about what they did and what they have done with Auburn, because I think it's interesting. Again, I'm not saying they're the reason Auburn loses, but I do want to kind of dive into it. There needs to be more consistency and more accountability. That's all I want to get at today. That's all I want to get at.
I mean, you look at other sports. I mean, targeting is in football. You don't really know what it is or when it's going to get called or how it gets called. Mm-hmm. And the same way with this, because you said they called a flop, a foul, and a no call. Mm-hmm. And you kind of like, yeah, the refs didn't lose Auburn in the game, but I mean, they did come down in a very divisive, important part of the game. They kind of took away Auburn's chance at tying the game. Not to say that caused Auburn to lose, because, I mean, you scored 3 points in a game? Yep. not in a half, in a game. So maybe winning shouldn't have even been in the option or in the cards. But down 3, and Wendell Green goes up, gets obviously fouled, and it cost Auburn 3 potential free throws that, I mean, I think all of us are pretty confident in Wendell Green's ability to at least make 2 of the 3. And they're like, oh, okay, if we lose by 1, okay, yeah. Well, better luck next time, I guess. But that, if it would have went in, would they have even called the and one?
I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know that how they would have handled it.
And I don't even know if you can, I don't even think you can review stuff like that. And especially if afterwards the game just kind of ended. You're just kind of sitting there looking at the TV like, well, what do I do now? I had to get calmed down because I was a little heated. There was some hats thrown around the room just because in the moment I was not looking at Wendell Green. I was looking at the ball. My eyes were tracking it in the air. And when it didn't go in, I was upset, but I was like, okay, well, he missed it. And then the replay came around and I saw him basically get trucked. So I'm getting hit stick, basically, is what it looked like. And I go, that's not a foul. They just called Katie Johnson on a foul on when the guy clearly just that Santiago's was a flop. I'm sorry. It looked like a flop and it was a flop. Wendell Green was actively like getting pushed out of the way by the body. It's confusing. I don't get it. I can't really speak on it too much without getting a little heated myself. So
it's one of those things where, again, it's not just SEC officials. It's just college basketball officiating. This isn't an Auburn specific thing. This is something that we see every single week at any level of Division I college basketball, whether it be, you know, Power Six or any of these mid-major conferences. But I want to talk about, you know, there are guys like Doug Sermons, Pat Adams, Doug Shouse, right? That Auburn has kind of, you know, had their run-ins with before, and other teams in the SEC have complained about. The lead official for the game yesterday, or not yesterday, I'm sorry, on Saturday, was Don Daly. And Don Daly has had an interesting track record with Auburn as opposed to some of these other high-profile officials. When you look at his last 12 games, I believe, with the Tigers, Auburn is 5-7. And actually, they're 5-8. I had to go check again. So the last 13, they're 5-8. There's no other official that I can find on KenPom over their last even like 5, 6, 7 games Auburn has a losing record with. I'm not saying that an official lost Auburn the game. Again, let's be very clear. Auburn scored 43 points in this one. They made 10 field goals. That lost them the game. But it was emphasized by a pathetic performance from the officiating crew and by a lead official who calls a lot of games Auburn loses. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not blaming him for anything. If anybody sees this, I want to be very clear. I'm not blaming him for anything. Auburn lost themselves the game. I don't think a lot of favors were done for them, though. For Tennessee, either. I mean, it's just, it needs to be better. It needs to be better, period. That's all I have to say.
Oof. I can't talk on it too much.
We'll just leave it on oof then, ladies and gentlemen. We'll just leave it on oof. More accountability, more consistency. That's kind of my thought on it. So
if you mentioned he was the 2019 Final Four ref, I might have had to leave.
If it was, oh my gosh, people would have. Oh, I think that was Shouse though, wasn't it?
I have no idea. For his health and my sanity, I did not look up the names.
All right. Well, I'll go double check that, make sure that's not true. But that's going to do it for today's episode of the Auburn Daily Show. Went a lot longer than I anticipated today, which is always nice. Hey, guys, you can follow the show on Twitter at the Auburn Daily. You can follow all of our written content over at auburndaily.com. Make sure to follow both of us on Twitter as well, at your boy the tank for Dylan, at Lance_ for me. See you all tomorrow for another edition of the Auburn Daily Show. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day, and God bless.